All right, War Room the Hockey Podcast is back with you. We took a few weeks off after our 100th episode. We are back on Zoom in different areas, so not in studio together. Back on Zoom, so this one will be available on YouTube. So make sure you head to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and YouTube for War Room the Hockey Podcast. Make sure you subscribe, rate and review, share, and enjoy. Episode 101. So it's the first episode after 100. We are now on the journey to 200, officially.
Amazing.
No real news headlines to start like we normally always do. NHL is on pause through the Christmas break, all that stuff. Depending on which side of the border you're on, there's fan capacity specifications and all these things, but big news of the day, and we'll make it the headline, and then we can jump right into those of it. Big news of the day: the 2022 World Junior Championship has officially been axed. It's officially done after the United States was forced to forfeit on the backs of only two. Positive tests, not actual confirmed cases, but positive tests. The Czech Republic, which they're calling themselves Czechia now, if you notice that, which that's not something to debate about. France is the Republic of France, but France is short for it. The Czech right. Republic, Czech or Czechia. It's a, you know, I guess it's branding, so, you know, good on them. But Czechia was forced to forfeit their game against Finland today on the backs of one positive test, not confirmed COVID, but positive test one. And officially, and I say officially, as of now, from what I'm seeing on TSN, sport, social media, all that stuff, is the entire tournament has been canceled. So the one way I look at the cancellation is good, simply because how do you navigate? Now, we can agree or disagree on how they've handled everything, but how do you navigate rankings and the medal rounds and all this stuff with teams that have been forced to forfeit again in games that they might have likely won? The U.S. loses to Switzerland because they forfeited.
You can't navigate it. The answer
so
is
how do you navigate that? So all of a sudden, the U.S., which if they play well, is your top seed in their group.
Of course.
If now if the tournament continued, wouldn't be top seed, and you run the risk of having a matchup that gets you knocked out before maybe you would have, and you get all these different things. So how do you, there's no real way to navigate it. So on that basis, the cancellation makes sense, because if you're going to do it, you may as well just be done with the whole thing. That way nobody's benefiting off the backs of something like this. But beyond that, the simple solution was you handled it wrong. Enough with this, let the boys play, unless the entire team gets wiped out with everything. But
now, if you're going to cancel a game or disqualify a player, then don't even play the dumb tournament. Don't even have it. Don't have everybody fly there. Sell a bunch of tickets you can't support, and then pull the plug on the whole deal. This is where I would start to launch into my anti-IHF rant, but this is, you know, as we'll get to later, this is going on across Canada, across into China and the Olympics and everything else. It all goes back to, the common thread here is the virus, and it came from China. So we can't, you can't end people's careers. You can't end people's careers on the basis of some guy somewhere maybe getting the sniffles. Look what happened last year. The U.S. U.S. and Sweden both lose guys that couldn't, because of COVID, that they sent home during the tournament.
Before the tournament even began, the U.S. didn't have Boucher or from Michigan and all that stuff.
And then they went back to Michigan, and they got the season pulled out from under them there. maybe the most stacked team in history, and they then that team gets its season pulled out from under. This is not any other business where you can live to fight another day. This is an age-defined group. When you're talking about bantams and midgets getting drafted into the ranks of junior, you're talking about junior players getting into NCAA and being drafted in the National Hockey League. This is an opportunity that comes once. And when you're now we're working on two and a half seasons that have been stripped away from these kids, and they can never come back. We talked about it at the very beginning of this situation in the spring of 20, that kids went home for March break expecting to come back to the Frozen Four tournament and the Memorial Cup and the Fred Page Cup and all that. And it just, that was the end of it. One afternoon, one Tuesday, their career just ended.
And half the schools in NCAA last year didn't even play all year. So how many kids on almost half the 60 NCAA programs couldn't even compete? So how many of them are seniors who are hoping for their senior year to be one that gets them a contract as an undrafted player, and now they don't have that? And then you see it when you get to the Frozen Four tournament, where now teams have to completely pull out because of it and can't even compete for a national championship and all this stuff. It's I saw a thing, and it's a former military veteran who's now in charge of an operation or a nonprofit type organization called Operation Underground Railroad. And it's former Tier 1 operators and all these people that go in and rescue children and women of sex trafficking and all these things. Oh, okay. And I saw a little clip of an interview with him, and he said the one question that we need to be asking ourselves with the pandemic, with anything, is how it affects our children. They are our greatest resource. They are the future. How does this affect our children? And what this is doing is, how many kids in the past 2 going on 3 years now have worked their butts off to graduate high school and they don't get to walk across the stage?
Right.
How many kids in university worked 3 jobs and to not only support their mother, but to pay their way through school to get this degree and have this future. And now they can't walk with pride across the graduation stage. How many kids work their butts off to their entire lives to have the right to compete at the Olympics, and now they can't go? Because how many young men and women work their butts off to compete for a state championship, a national championship, a world championship, hoist that trophy, get drafted, you know, earn a contract, do these things, and that's stripped away from them because we can't have scouts in the building to see them play. It's not a bold prediction here. It's a safe prediction for me to say that this is our generation, my son's generation, and the generation just before them are going to have major lifelong lasting social effects as a result of how COVID has been very poorly managed.
So at least in defense of the IHF, it's better to be a no-show than a poor show. And at least if you're going to completely hoop a tournament, then completely hoop the tournament. Don't have this team, you know, don't have the U.S. forfeiting to Switzerland and then finishing third, or forfeiting again the next day to Sweden and not making the medal round, for crying out loud. What kind of a tournament is it when the best can't play the best? So they pulled the plug on that.
Which is the smart decision because it's an optics issue.
Yes.
All of a sudden, yeah. And right, wrong, or indifferent. And you and I FaceTimed this morning, and you and I both kind of rolled our eyes at the concept of it. But it, yep. Right, wrong, or indifferent, it's an optics issue. If all of a sudden the U.S. has to forfeit to Switzerland, and that affects the ranking, but all of a sudden you deem Sweden, who has 6 positive tests, yeah, they're still capable of playing, or, you know, this or that. And now it's an optics issue where even if it's wrong to say it's a conspiracy, you at least have that narrative being pushed out there now, and now it's an issue. So I agree with you that the right thing to do, if you're going to do this, is to just simply cut the whole thing rather than cut one player or one team and all that stuff. So absolutely, we're on the same page with that.
So here's a tournament again that you talk to kids, pick somebody, Carey Price, PK Subban, Zach Parise, highlights of their careers, most of which never win a Stanley Cup. Highlight of their career will be Memorial Cup, which is, again, very seldom, or World Junior Championship, which is very seldom. So this is an opportunity that comes along once in a young man's life and taken away. If there's a real danger to society for having the World Junior Tournament, then okay, you know, try your best to make that case. But this is a matter of dramatic overkill. Thank you, Connor Hellebuck, for articulating that. Shame on you, Craig Button, for making fun of him for saying this is overkill. These are young, healthy people. These are not 80-year-olds with 3-pack-a-day habits. These are healthy young men that cannot possibly be hurt by this thing. Nobody has been yet, and yet this is the National Hockey League, the major juniors, the junior A circuits. Everybody is allowing themselves to be pulled around and whipsawed by arbitrary government decisions that are closing down billions of dollars worth of industry here, ending careers, causing, we won't know how much damage for years yet to come. And until somebody stands up and says, no, thank you to all of this, you know, lock everybody in a sealed room because someone somewhere got the sniffles. Now let's shut down everything until somebody stands up and says, no, we're not doing that. We're going to go right ahead. And it's not going to be the National Hockey League. It has to be society as a whole.
It's a shame that it won't be the National Hockey League, because you would think that Bettman, being the smart businessman, would not want himself or any of the owners to continue to lose revenue and lose money.
Exactly.
You would think that the decision would be, well, you know, we'll do what we can safety wise, but we got to put butts in seats, and we got to get back to an 82-game schedule like normal. And we, right, you know, and we got to affect change on our testing policies and stuff so that we can do that, because we just, from a financial standpoint, the league cannot continue to lose money like this. The players are already fed up with having to give a percentage back due to the flat cap. Yep. Now the potential of that being extended for whatever reason, it's not going to end well. And so at some point, whether it's Bettman or it's Daly or it's society or anything, somebody's got to step up and go, enough of this shit. Something's got to give.
That's right. And that's why you're seeing more and more support now for a system like what the NFL has adopted, and the NBA. And whoever thought that we would be on war room applauding anything that those two leagues did, but this is a long overdue step in the right direction. As pointed out, as you and I have talked about during our discussions of the business of the game over a period of many, many months, these are teams that generate between two and three, some of them $3+ million per night in revenue for every home game. How many of those do you want no people in the stands, so you get to generate all the expense of having a game and none of the revenue? No thanks. How long do you want the owners to tolerate that? How long do you want the players to go and have to pay back the loan in order to have their salaries made in full from last year, which they're in the process of doing for the next 2 or 3 seasons? It's unsustainable. and it was stupid, and it's just not necessary. I mean, why would anyone ever say okay to that system? Right now, you can basically play without restriction in the United States until somebody else gets a wild, harebrained idea. But in Canada, the provincial government, from Trudeau in Ottawa down to Bonnie Henry in Victoria, they're all saying, oh my gosh, you know, like dancing is illegal and you can only have this many people at your Christmas dinner and you can't go out for New Year's. Nobody's fed up after 2 years. Nobody's fed up with this. So, okay, I kind of promised that we wouldn't that we wouldn't do that before we started.
Some of it's got to get out. So, I heard a thing about people being fed up. But hey, rules are rules. But it's like, no, they're not.
No, they're not.
First of all, not only are mandates illegal. It's illegal. But second of all, if you're fed up, you're fed up.
Yeah.
If you're fed up, but you're not doing anything about it, then you're not fed up. It's, right. You know what I mean? So it's crazy to me. And it's one of those things where from a hockey perspective, from a financial hockey perspective, if the league is not careful, they're going to get major pushback from the players, and they're going to get to the point of whether it's at the end of the CBA or before, where the players association is going, the players are going to come together and go, we're not doing it.
Right.
You want to do it this way? Pull up the guys from the AHL, bring guys from Europe, do something. But until this stops, we're not playing. And you're going to see a players association led lockout. Lockout and hold out until Bettman pulls his head out of his ass and makes the correct right changes that need to happen. And because the players are not going to put up with it anymore, having to continually give percentages of their salary to owners and all this stuff due to flat cap, they're not going to do it anymore. So,
no, and I the only place that I would disagree with you is that we'll never know this. We will never know this. Certainly you and I won't know it firsthand. My money would be on Gary Bettman wanting to play, because he is, first and foremost, he is a capitalist. He's a businessman. He knows how to make ends meet. He knows how to grow the game. This is a tug of war between public opinion and optics and the bottom line. And so far, public opinion and the media have won out. Unfortunately, in the ranks of the PA, there is still dissension, just like there is in the ranks of our neighborhood, where this person's scared out of his mind and won't leave his house and thinks that you're trying to kill everybody if you walk to your mailbox. So you've got, and I'm not taking shots at anybody here, but Jonathan Drouin saying, I don't feel comfortable playing with players that are not vaccinated. I don't feel comfortable playing where there is a risk that somebody might have the virus, which, again, you can't get much more healthy on the face of the earth than Jonathan Drouin from a physical standpoint. But then there's guys who say, enough, I don't care, I'm playing. You know, let me play, and I don't care who's got it because it's not going to hurt me anyway. Yep. We're doing just fine. So leave me alone and let me play and put our fans back in the seats. Let my parents and my friends come to the game. Resume the CHL season. Resume the USHL season. Enough is enough.
Yep. So I don't know. I get that there's some dissension, but I'm predicting that you're going to see at least a big pushback, if to the point of a we're not playing type of thing, if from the majority of the players, if this doesn't change. And I know from a capitalist standpoint and whatever, we're sometimes quick to defend Gary Bettman, you know, for whatever reason. And, but there's something to be said for, at what point is he out of touch with where things are headed, right, wrong, or indifferent. And
remember, you know, too, remember that he does what the owners tell him to do. He does not mandate things to the owners. He doesn't go to them and with decisions and say, here's what we're doing. They vote. The Board of Governors tells him what they want to do, whether it's player safety or revenue or anything else. The Board of Governors tells him what to do, as does the Players Association tell Donald Fehr what they want to do. I am hoping that one bright spot coming out of the Olympics cancellation on NHL players is that there are enough high-profile guys, like most recently Brad Marchand, who are saying, I had one shot to play in the Olympics. I want to make my own decision. I'll go, and if I get quarantined, I'll stay, and I'll sacrifice the pay. I want to play for my country. And now there are, you know, Vladimir Tarasenko said that about playing for Russia, Brad Marchand, Stamkos, guys like that have come up wanting to go and play. The problem is when you are under contract, your life doesn't entirely belong to you. So and when you are part of a player's union, you give up the right to make unilateral autonomous decisions. Mm-hmm. So the good news is I'm part of the PA, and the PA has negotiated us some fantastic deals with regard to merchandise sales and the ability to negotiate contracts and become free agents and make millions upon millions of dollars. The bad news is when our Players Association as a whole says we aren't going to the Olympics, then none of us are going to the Olympics. And you give up that right to make an individual decision. Whether or not that continues to be the case after the next CBA, who knows? But that's kind of the harsh reality of it. I agree that if a guy wants to go and he gets hurt and he's uninsured, or he has to quarantine in China for 5 weeks because he tested positive, that's his call.
Here's the problem.
You're on my payroll. If I'm Jeremy Jacobs in Boston and Brad Marchand is on my payroll, I don't know if I support him and say, it's a free market world. Go have fun. You work for me.
Yep. Here's the issue. And this is a optics standpoint. Again, I'm going to blindly follow vaccine mandates.
Right.
The league says I need to be vaccinated. So guess what? I'm going to get vaccinated. But all of a sudden, it's my choice if I want to go to the Olympics.
Yeah.
Which is it? Well, do you stand for free choice, or do you stand for what somebody tells you you have to do? Optics standpoint. I can't begin to imagine. I can only imagine the pride. I know the pride of pulling on a varsity high school sweater or a university sweater and playing for your school. Right. I can only imagine how that would be turned up times 100 to pull on your country's colors and represent your country, whether it be at the World Juniors or the Olympics. And I can only imagine the heartbreak of having that ripped away from you for whatever reason, either a major injury or COVID or whatever. I can only imagine. The thing is, now, would you deem, before I continue, would you deem NHL players contractors, or how would you, or full-on employees by signing these contracts? Because there's independent contractors, and then you're a full-on contracted employee of the Boston Bruins. Or
that's a great question. That's a great question. I believe they would be contractors. Okay. But I don't
either
the letter of the law. Though, I don't know the answer to that. That's a great question.
Either way, I look at it, and this might be an overly simplistic way of looking at it, because I'm no expert, and I may very well through my sports management stuff take some courses on CBA and all these contract stuff. If I do, great. It's good information. Up to our conversation at this point, I'm no expert on contracts, and I've never been great at math and all this stuff. But the way I, but in the overly simplistic view of it, the way I view it is you are an employee and in your contract, it says what they expect of you. And you are expected to follow that.
Yes.
If they put it in the contract and then they go against it, now you have a case for a lawsuit or a grievance. If they put it in the contract and if something's not in the contract, well, then you don't get the right to do that. So unless it says it in the contract that you are able to freely go play in the Olympics or go do this and that, you kind of signed your life away when you signed that your $9 million contract.
Right.
Because it's a 50-50 thing.
That's my,
it is 50-50. There's really no, and that's why I asked the question on independent contractor or whatever. There's really no, it's hard to pick a right or wrong. We come at it through our podcast, talking about it from a management, optics, financial standpoint. But you and I both know from high level competitive hockey to coaching to scouting to all of it, we also know from to drop in to whatever else. We also know what it's like, the joy to play the game. And so how do you pick sides and say, okay, yes, you have the right because you earned it to represent your country. Who wouldn't want to represent their country? But wait a minute, you're also a $9 million asset to these people who are paying you $9 million a year and expect you to be in the lineup night in and night out, helping us compete for a Stanley Cup. So we kind of have the right to say whether or not you get to go and play and potentially have a season ending or maybe career ending, depending on the severity, injury playing against Slovakia in Tokyo or in, you know, somewhere. So
I guess this is what lengthy stacks of contracts are written for, to cover every eventuality. The problem is this is new ground for everybody. So yes, I believe in independent free choice, and I believe in Brad Marchand's freedom of choice to go to the Olympics. If it costs him a couple paychecks, it costs him a couple paychecks, but he should be able to go if he chooses to go. I also believe that if you are on my payroll to the tune of $300,000 or $400,000 per pay period, and I'm in the midst of a playoff run, as are the Boston Bruins, and every one of those playoff games is going to net me another $3.5 million, and I stand to possibly not make the playoffs if you and Bergeron both go to China and get stuck for 5 weeks. Now you could possibly not just cost me two of my biggest assets, but you could cost me $15 or $20 million in April and May. So I don't know that from Jeremy Jacobs' standpoint, do I still believe that Brad Marchand should be able to go? No, I don't. So that's the problem in a situation like this. There are two very, very divergent sides, neither one incorrect, to the same issue. And how this gets solved, I don't know. I certainly, as much as I'm loath to say I can see it both ways, I can see it both ways. And I
see it both ways too. The fantasy solution here that I see is you just, you know, whether it be next CBA, and this is a far-fetched solution that just won't happen, but for the sake of spitballing, you know, let's say it. The solution at the next CBA would be, all right, well, if that's what you guys want, if you want that autonomy to make your own choices that way, okay. Well, then from now on, starting this coming season, max contracts are $3 million. You're not making $9, $10, $11, $12, $13 million anymore. Right. You're just not. All right, fine. $3 million is max. I don't care who you are. And now you're an asset, but now if you have a season ending injury playing against Latvia in China, then okay. Well, we lose some money, but it's not like we're in the red.
Right.
All right, cool. But if you want to make $9, $10, $11 million, well, now all of a sudden we're looking at a situation where, nope, you don't have that choice anymore. You are my asset.
Correct.
But I do see it from both sides. It's not an easy thing to solve. And
I'm not,
I have CBA negotiations every 5-6 years or whenever it is.
Well, it's, I'm not an IHF fan. I'm not an International Olympic Committee fan. I just, I'm hard pressed to tolerate Hockey Canada and way less pressed to tolerate USA Hockey. We know what those business operations look like. Not a fan. They hide behind growing the game, and they are money. They're profit takers. That's all there is to it. So we'll see how this happens. Fortunately, I have no skin in it. I'm defaulting back to something that you and I have probably talked about a dozen times on here over the last year. And that is, especially in the last few months, all you see every day on any hockey coverage, no matter where you're getting your news, is China virus. China virus, this and that. Everything is all about the virus. What nobody is talking about, no one ever, anywhere, at any point, nobody says they're not sick and they're all vaccinated. Mm-hmm. Those two things have never, ever once come up. They're starting
to. It goes now. Against the narrative.
Yeah.
So it goes against the narrative. It went with the narrative to say that they need to be vaccinated, get vaccinated. Then they'll talk about the vaccines and they'll talk about everything. Get vaccinated. But now that everybody's, now that 99.999% of NHL players, with exception of Tyler Bertuzzi, are vaccinated, now they don't touch it, the vaccine word. Now it's, oh, well, 99 players, 25 coaches, 18 staff members, oh my gosh, in COVID protocol, because that's the headline. Omicron and all this stuff is destroying things. It's reaping havoc on everybody, because that goes with the narrative.
Yeah.
It goes with the fear-mongering narrative that to keep you under thumb. And
that's why it sounds good to say there are 26 new cases in the NHL today. 26 new cases. Gee, that sounds like a lot. They didn't even know they had it until they were tested this morning at practice. What difference does it make that they test positive? Who cares? 26 cases means nothing. How many are sick? How many are really sick? How many are headed for hospital? How many are having even symptoms? How many are even blowing their nose? Not a single one. Has any one player ever gotten actually sick in the last year and a half? No.
99% survival rate in the entire population. But what they do with their narrative, and then we'll get back to hockey, what they do with their narrative is it's over a 99% survival rate. But they won't touch the survival rate. What they'll do is they'll pick a specific demographic. They'll pick a specific country, a specific area, and say 800 cases in the last 2 weeks. That's what they'll touch. They'll touch over a 99% survival rate. But what they'll say is, oh, but that 1% is still this many people, right? So they focus on the really, really small things to make it seem like it's this big thing that's killing everybody.
Because they want to make
the less significant number more important. So
right.
99% survival rate, that's what matters. But they don't touch it because it goes against their narrative. 1% dying, which is how many people of the entire Earth population, 1%. But yet I saw a post on social media where somebody discussed just that. I'm tired of people talking about 99% survival rate. That's great. But the 1% is still X many people. And it's like, yeah, and it's tragic. But guess what? Circle of life, people die. People die of the flu. They died of H1N1. They die of chicken pox. They die. And that's 1%. That's how many people out of 99% that either are asymptomatic get out of the hospital after 3 weeks or walk down the street without even knowing they even have it. So it goes against the narrative to say, hey, this police officer saved this little girl today, or hey, 99% survival rate. It goes against the narrative. Their narrative is fear and control. That's what they want. So anyway, optics wise, I do have one last optics thing.
I have one philosophical question, Evan, I'm sorry. Yep. Going back to the 70s to one of my favorite deep thinkers of all time, Archie Bunker. He said, would you be happier if they was pushed out of windows? Ponder. Anyhow, sorry to interrupt.
An optics thing here as we step away from the COVID thing that we promised before we recorded that we wouldn't carry on about.
Can't help ourselves.
What's your take on the optics of this? Because there's a pushback here and a narrative now, optics wise, in the hockey community that up until the World Juniors was canceled, the men's U20 tournament was able to go, but the women's U18 tournament was canceled outright before it even started. And again, I'm not bringing that up, and I'm not on board with it or against it for the same reason that other people are, which is a very bullshit feminist thing of, oh, so men, this and that. But from an optic standpoint, I just thought I'd ask what your take is on it, that despite COVID, that right, wrong, or different, touches every human being in some fashion. Yeah. The U20 men's tournament was able to go for 3 days or however long before it was canceled, and the women's tournament never got off the ground. Agreed. And I knew you'd say it, and I just wanted to hear you say it just for the sake of conversation. But
you set me up.
Yeah. Again, the optics of it. Yeah. But there, right, wrong, or different, there is an optics of it. Again, narrative. Nobody will touch on them. On and from the beginning of this, and it has nothing to me. Step outside COVID. From the whole beginning of argument. In the beginning of the debate and the conversation of women's hockey and a women's NHL and our conversation a year and a half ago or so with Nancy Wilson and, you know, all these things about it. Notice how, again, what nobody mentions is money. What nobody mentions is revenue. What nobody mentions is that the U.S. women's soccer team, percentage-wise, makes more money than the men. Percentage-wise, but yes. Again, what they do is they look at that specific little number and say, "Oh, it's not the same or greater," but percentage-wise, they make more. What nobody talks about, because it goes against the narrative, is that women's hockey is exciting when it's U.S. and Canada,
right,
in either the Olympics or their rivalry series. But step outside of U.S. and Canada in their rivalry series or the Olympics, and what do the women bring in? Right. And nobody touches on it because it goes against the equality empowerment narrative. But revenue, that's the reason why they're not on national television. It's the reason why to the point of this conversation, there's still no WNHL. It's why they're still having their professional women's hockey players association Dream Gap tour rather than actually playing competitive, true, meaningful hockey games. It's not because they're not great athletes, but it's because of revenue. But nobody wants to touch on it. They blew up about 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, about the controversy about that sportscaster. Somebody made a comment about how the 200th ranked male tennis player would beat Serena Williams.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not saying that Serena Williams isn't the best female tennis player, but you put her up against a male tennis player and she will likely lose. It's just,
you know what, here's the converse to this argument. And to illustrate your point, I don't know, pick one, Miss America Beauty Pageant, Victoria's Secret, somebody's, the world, the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition. How about that? We've all seen it. We've all seen it for 30 years. Do you think that thing would sell as many magazines if it was guys?
No.
We'll probably never know, but you know why there's never been a Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition that was guys? Because no one cares. Yeah. And I'm not saying nobody cares about the female game. The ladies' game is spectacular. It makes money when it's U.S., Canada. When it's basically anyone else, it's a charity. And they're fantastic athletes. They are fantastic hockey players. They're unbelievably skilled. It's a beautiful game, but it has to make money. And it has nothing to do with them being female. The WHA came into being in 1972 as a rival to the NHL. In 1978, 79, it folded. Was it because those guys were, nobody cared about them? Were they singled out to be outcasts of the hockey world? No, it just didn't draw in Oakland, California at that time. It didn't draw in Atlanta, Georgia at that time, Birmingham, Alabama. It didn't draw. It is a money-making proposition. If you make money, you're going to do fine. If you don't make money, you better figure out how to start making money. And I'm all for the women's game. And I think at some point soon, we're going to see a viable women's hockey league. They have to figure out how to draw attention to it and make money with it. And it takes time. You can't simply run out and say, well, they work really hard and they deserve to make a living. They're really good. That's not enough. There were 400 guys in the WHA that worked really hard and deserved to make a living, and they were selling cars all of a sudden. It just doesn't wash. So to answer
that's
your
the narrative
question,
right now.
It's money. It's
that's
all
the narrative right now when you see, you know, Hockey Day in Canada and their little stories they do or anything like that with the interviews. That's the narrative right now is, oh well, you guys are fantastic hockey players, and oh, you know, you deserve to have your own league, you know. Let's make it happen. But one, nobody's offering the solutions. But
write the check.
And two,
and make it happen.
Two, money.
Right.
It's great. Any businessman who would invest, okay, any businessman who would invest that's worth his or her salt will say, okay, I will write you a check for name the sum for your own professional viable women's hockey league.
Right.
I will do that. But here's what I expect in return. It's a hockey version of Shark Tank. Here's what I expect in return. I will do this, but in total, but in the next year, I expect X percentage of that back in revenue. Earned back. You earn money. Here's the investment. Now you go out and earn the money, and this is what I expect back in this time frame. And the reason why nobody's doing it right now, again, and we'll move on after this because we agree, again, isn't because they aren't good.
No.
Poulin, Hillary Knight, Kendall Coyne, all these women, great. They're great. The game is growing in all these states and countries and areas. Awesome. But the reason why nobody's done that and come to them and said, here's your check. Now, here's when I expect it, the investment to be returned, is because they know, anybody who would invest knows that the likelihood of a returned investment, at least right now, is almost non-existent. It has nothing to do with how good they are or the fact that they're women. It has everything to do with the fact that just on a scale, men's hockey draws and is more exciting than women's hockey, unless it's US Canada at either the Olympics or a rivalry series. But there's too many women out there playing the game to only have US and Canada every single time.
That's right.
So you gotta draw money.
Remember this. When I was a child, players made $5,000-$6,000 a year. Gordie Howe had an off-season job. The best player in the history of the game had an off-season job to make ends meet. It wasn't because he wasn't any good. The game had been around for 50 years at that point. He still had an off-season job. It takes time. It takes development. You can't just say we deserve it. I mean, why do they draw better sponsors at Spit and Chiclets than you and I do? Because the sponsor's going to get something in return. He's going to sell more cars, more Budweiser, more blue jeans, more whatever his product is. He's going to sell more of it because his name is on Spit and Chiclets than he is if he put the same amount of money and effort behind War Room, the hockey podcast. It's not that we don't know what we're doing. We have a different audience. We have a smaller audience. We're developing ours. We don't just say we deserve it. We're trying to develop it. So it's the same deal. And you just have to, we're doing it for the love of this. We still have our own way of making a living. And if we ever get beyond that, that's great. And if we don't, we're having a blast at it. And we're doing it for the love of the game. So it's what you got to stick with.
Yeah. Anyway, all right.
I'm glad you brought that up, though, because it's this is all part of the scope of things that we have to be very careful of. And I'm not going to go off. Give me 30 seconds. It doesn't matter if it's COVID or what the status, what your argument is. Racism, we don't like the female game, or that awful Scotiabank ad that used to run, I think they pulled it now, finishing with P.G. Subban going, "This, we belong here." Such awful, despicable nonsense on that ad, I couldn't stand it. It's anecdotal. Are there people who don't think that there should be a female game? Probably so. I don't know any, but I suppose there are. Are there people who think that minorities shouldn't be playing hockey? Maybe so. I'm not aware of any. At any level, from when you were playing minor hockey or I was playing hockey back when, or until I played in my last beer league games just a few months ago, it's anecdotes, but it makes headlines. If somebody talks about it, then, oh my gosh, they don't want females to play. They don't want black people to play. They don't want Chinese people to play, or East Indians, or whatever it is. That sells copy. It's nonsense and it's anecdotal. There might be one out there someplace. And like we said before, will they chirp you and say awful things about your weight or your coke habit or your divorce or whatever it is that your problem is? Yes, that will always be the case in hockey, but that doesn't sell copy. Only racism or sexism sells copy. So don't buy it. But anyway, thanks for bringing
it up. It's been a money grab since they started with these initiatives.
Yeah.
You know, hockey is for everyone. And
of course it is. It always has been.
All these commercials and all these things. Look, on a ground level, for the sake of being careful of how and what we say, I will say this. Hockey's the greatest game. It's Amen. The greatest sport.
Amen.
Should we work to find a way to make it better accessible for everyone? Are there good things that have come out of the Hockey is for Everyone initiative, like individual organizations putting together hockey clinics for deaf children or for, you know, or wheelchair bound people or anything like that? Absolutely. These are great things. It should be more accessible on any level, from a competitive to a recreational. It should be more accessible for more people. I agree. I agree with that aspect of it. Again, it's how you go about it. And it's not allowing yourself to lose sight of the fact that at the end of the day, though, when you're talking about high level competitive hockey, it is very selective for a reason. I have all the respect in the world. We've talked about this before. I have all the respect in the world for the parents of Chris Fournier.
Yeah.
But if Chris Fournier was allowed to play in the NHL simply because, hey, I like the game and I want to, he's not only going to get hurt, but it doesn't do anything for him or the game. It's selective. It's selective for a reason. Special Forces is selective for a reason. You don't just get to be a Navy SEAL because you decide it's time that a woman gets to be a Navy SEAL. No, you have every right to go to BUDS the same way any man does, but it's the same selection process. It's selective for a reason. Yep. It's that selective for a reason. And it's ultimately, and it's why up to this point, there hasn't been any big, and I knock on wood and pray that it doesn't, but it's why there hasn't up to this point been any big cultural major shifts in who's allowed to play at the NHL level and who's allowed to do this is because right. At the end of the day, guess what? It is ultimately a way to sell t-shirts.
Fair enough.
I'm going to sell t-shirts at NHLshop.com that have rainbow lettering and says hockey is for everyone. You know how much money they've made off of shirts and tape and whatever else that they've done with that? I guarantee you they've made millions upon millions of it. It makes money. That's why they do it.
Do you remember being in 2019? Of course you do at the BCHL showcase. There were how many of us there? Maybe 50 or 60, something like that total. All scouts except basically for you and I probably. You know why those scouts are there? And this is a kind of a trick question. They're there to discriminate. My job as a GM and a coach and a scout is to discriminate against you. If you suck, I don't want you on my team. I don't get paid to discriminate against your sexuality or your race or your religion. I get paid to discriminate against your complete lack of competitive ability. If you can't compete, I don't want you. I'm going to discriminate you off my list and never look at you again. And I hope the next guy picks you up because I'm going to continue to kick their butts for the next 4 years or however long you last there. Everyone gets paid to discriminate, whether you work at a business or whether you work in the game. It doesn't matter. There's a reason I'm not in Hollywood or the NBA. I suck.
Yep, agreed. So for the sake of being careful with how we say it, let's agree. I think we do agree, but I'll say it. You're laughing. I don't know why you're laughing. I'm being serious. I'm laughing at myself. But
because you're trying to make a serious point, and I'm just, my career is long over. I have nothing to be concerned about. You can cancel me. I can't get fired anymore. You can't pull my sponsorship. You can't do anything to me. I am a dangerous man. I don't care. You, on the other hand, have a long career ahead of you.
I'm 30 years old and have, God willing, have plenty of life left to live. So, you know. But in all seriousness, hockey being the greatest game,
yep.
I don't think that's a debate. You're welcome to debate me and try to prove the point that another sport is better, but hockey is the greatest game, the greatest sport. Because of that, I will say this. Hockey is for everyone. It isn't for everyone. Whether it's competitive, whether it's recreational, it should be. Hockey should be accessible for everyone, should be accessible for everybody who wants to. How you go about that is what's right or wrong.
Right.
Cancel culture, making it race or sexual, making it this or that is bullshit. It's wrong. It's not how you go about that. Hockey being how you go about it, hockey is for everyone. And now each organization puts together their own clinics, their own initiatives, their own whatever that says, here's my deaf hockey clinic. Here's my blind hockey clinic. Here's my disabled hockey clinic.
Right.
Here's my, you know, for women and girls. Here's
look at the girls in sledge hockey.
Here's all these things. You put together initiatives and you create these nonprofits and these organizations that allows these children to do it in a way that doesn't cost them their next month's rent.
Right.
Right. And things like that. That's how you go about it. And hopefully from there, you've created a situation where equipment drives and all this stuff so that families who can't afford it don't have to put their children in hockey helmets that spin all the way around their head.
What kind of a neglectful person would do that to a child?
jokes. But so that families are able to give their children equipment so that their children can learn to skate and experience these things. And through there, through those initiatives and through those moments, you hopefully begin to affect positive change so that in the long run for the next generation and the future of the game, it is now more financially accessible for everyone.
Yes.
Then you'll obviously get into the competitive side of it, which is more selective. But from a welcome to the game, learn how to play and skate aspect, it should be for everyone. And hopefully, if you do it the right way, these initiatives can lead to a positive change long term that can lead to that.
Yep.
Simply profiting off of that phrase through t-shirts and whatever else, and then folding your arms if you're freaking Akeem Alou or anybody else and saying, yeah. And saying, we should be able to play, or there should be more black coaches, or there should be, you know, this or that, or the reason I didn't do this is because of Bill Peters, that's not how you affect change. That's not
equality.
That's not creating a culture and a climate and a community where hockey truly is for everyone.
Yeah. And shame on Tara Sloan. I'll never watch her or that nonsense on Hometown Hockey again. And good for Bettman and Daly for not falling for that Matt Dumba, Akeem Alou nonsense. It was bad enough they gave that guy a job, but not falling for all that BLM crap a couple of years ago when it was all the rage, because there's just no such thing and it doesn't exist in the NHL. And good for them for not, it was all again, a grab and it didn't work.
Well, it's a money grab, but what I mean by this is, again, there's a difference, and it's why from sports to politics to anything else, the media always has their narrative of things. It's because Tara Sloan will come out from a media perspective and say, oh, this is great for culture and society and equality, and oh my gosh, good for you, so brave. From a business perspective, anybody worth their salt, and we can say Bettman's out of touch all we want, but if he is as smart as he says he is, or we think he is, he will never ever bow to that, because from a business perspective, you do not make money on Black Lives Matter. You do not make money on that stuff. You saw that same year, that was the first bubble playoff of COVID, remember?
Yes.
That was that year where all of a sudden there was a pause, then they came back, and then the playoffs were the first playoffs that were in the bubble.
Yeah.
And you remember that same year, the NBA was doing the same thing and plastered all over their court and on every commercial and was Black Lives Matter. On their uniforms wasn't their name. It was some racial social justice term, whether it be freedom or, you know, whatever, and everything like that. And it was, and the NBA's ratings were lower than they have ever been in history. It's because people don't want to watch sports for politics. They watch sports. And it's why this is going to be the one and only episode of War Room where we rant like this about something like this.
Come on.
And hear me out on why. Because no, people don't tune into these things for the same things that are shoved down their throats 24/7 everywhere else. They tune in to watch the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Tampa Bay Lightning compete for first place in the Eastern Conference, and the excitement and the edge of your seat and the pride and waving the towels and pom-poms and excitement. That's why they tune in. They don't tune in to see Black Lives Matter on a basketball court and continue to hear why Black Lives Matter this and racial justice that. And so to our listeners, this episode is things that needed to be said, but moving forward, we need to promise each other and ourselves and our listeners that we limit the exposure of COVID discussions and things moving forward.
Let's remember this. Would you or I turn on any podcast that went on and on about social issues, or would we rather listen to Colby Armstrong and PJ Stock and guys like that tell stories and giggle up a storm? No questions, no contest. So yeah, let's get back to what works for us. But I agree with you, under the circumstances, canceling a World Junior Tournament, taking the players out of the NHL players out of the Olympics, probably a lot of things that needed to be said today. And I appreciate you letting me have a little bit of latitude on it.
Things need to be said. We hope our listeners give us a little latitude with it as well. Yeah. That given the circumstances, given the things in headlines, it would be, whether we're doing this for fun or whether we're making a living out of it, it would be neglectful to not discuss.
Got to address it. Yeah.
You got to at least address it, if not discuss it. Right. So it needed to be said. It needed to happen. I like this week's episode because of it. Needed to happen. Needed to be said. Get it out there. But now that it's out there, move forward. Because despite all the things that we may or may not agree with, there is still some really, really good hockey happening. And whether the season is paused or not, or taxi squads or this, or playoff bubbles or limited fans or whatever, it's still tremendous hockey on the ice. And from a true hockey fan, that's what we need to put out there for people. So we appreciate everybody for tuning in and sticking with us and allowing us to say what needed to be said this week. Moving forward, we promise it's put to bed and we'll get back to hockey. So
absolutely. Yeah. Next week we'll have some kind of mid-season observations and see where we stand at that point with resumed play. And I've been fed a couple more stories that we missed on episode 100. So hopefully we'll get to those next week too.
Yep. Look forward to it. Look forward to our discussion about whether or not we're going to hit or miss on our prediction of Philadelphia.
Long way to go.
We'll touch on that. Thank you everybody for tuning in. Head to Facebook and Instagram, Warm the Hockey Podcast, at Warm the Hockey Podcast, respectfully. Make sure you like and follow us there. Engage with us. Make sure you head to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. And make sure you subscribe, rate and review, share with family, friends, everybody you know. And we look forward to seeing you guys next week and joining us as we get back into true hockey discussion and some good laughs and some good talks and good times. So thank you for joining on Zoom this week.
Great time.
I appreciate it.
That sounded like it, but it was fun.
Yes. I'm Evan Rauer with Warm the Hockey Podcast. We'll see you all throughout the hockey community. Cheers.
Cheers.